This episode of the Squawker Talker is brought to you by Beer 52. Beer 52 is the world's number one craft beer club and delivers crates of hand-picked craft beer to your door. Squawker Talker listeners can get £12 off a crate and two free beers by using the code SQUAWKER at checkout. So if you like a good deal on beer, visit beer52.com.
Hello, football fans around the world. Welcome to the Friday Squawker Talker. Have we got a jam-packed show for you today? Joining me today is Ollie Young-Miles. Hello, Ollie.
Hello, Nick.
How you doing?
I'm very well. How are you?
There's a rumour going around that you had some trouble going on getting here because of a cow.
Yeah. So there was a cow on the tracks as I was trying to come back here from Southampton. So that delayed things by 3 hours last night, which
That's
was
fun.
Nice.
That's fun. Yeah, also joining us, undelayed and uncowed, is Greg Lee, freelancer for The National and 442. Hello, Greg.
Hello, Nick.
How's it going?
Very well, thank you.
Thanks
no cows
for
in
us.
My journey, so.
No cows.
Always a bonus.
Also joining us, esteemed guest today, Sanjay Atwal, Squawker CEO. Hello, Sanj.
Good day.
How's it going?
Very well today.
Yeah? You feeling it?
I'm enjoying football at the moment.
Okay, good. Good. Well, we've got a lot to talk about. And probably the big headline this morning was that Arsene Wenger... everyone thought that Arsene Wenger called a press conference, Ollie, but it was just his regular Friday. Mm. He does it every Friday morning,
yeah.
as you all know. He says he'll be managing next season, be it at Arsenal or somewhere else. He'll decide his future in March or April. But obviously the big cloud looming over his head is the fact that it's happened again. They've lost to Bayern Munich 5-1, and they're probably out of the Champions League. There was so much worrying about that performance for Arsenal. What was the most worrying thing from your point of view for Arsenal fans?
I think just the manner in which they capitulated in the second half and sort of showed no real fight or determination to get back into the game. There was a real lack of leadership there. Once Koscielny went, there was no checking goal, obviously, who's a big presence as well. And there was just nothing really to cling on to. Obviously, the tie is pretty much done now, I think we have to assume. And the manner in which Wenger was speaking post-match as well was very downbeat, which is, you know, quite rare for him, actually, to sort of come out and question the mentality of the players. So there really wasn't anything for Arsenal fans, I think, to cling on to after that.
Greg, let's talk a bit about the tactics, because before the game, the lineups were announced, and the immediate thing that everyone's eye was drawn to was Arsenal decided to play Xhaka and Coquelin midfield, a partnership which has not worked so far at all. Oxlade-Chamberlain, arguably Arsenal's best player, and during this poor patch of form, was farmed out wide. And Bayern named a three-man midfield of Xavi Alonso, Arturo Vidal, and Thiago Alcantara. Arguably all three are world-class midfielders. I mean, and that's where the game was seemingly won and lost. It was all a bit obvious tactically, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And there was lots of talk in the build-up to the game. Would Mesut Ozil be either dropped or maybe pushed out wide in a 4-3-3? The away game at Chelsea recently, they actually started with Ozil out wide. So I think that was the strategy that most people thought they would go with, considering they're going to the Allianz, taking on this team, as you say, with so much quality in the centre of midfield. But the problem with Ozil is he doesn't offer you that. He doesn't drop in. He doesn't kind of offer you that three-man midfield. He's kind of almost as a second striker off the ball, which meant they just got overrun time and time again. And it was a surprise to see Oxlade-Chamberlain, who probably has been their best player in the last few weeks, as you say, shunted out wide. And that probably was where the game was ultimately lost for Arsenal.
Sanj, before the game, Wenger mentioned that he saw sort of Ozil playing sort of second striker role up front, and we saw him definitely. He wasn't part of a three man midfield, but he put in a horrendous performance, didn't he?
Ozil, Ozil. It's really really difficult to see where he's going to go now in this Arsenal team. He looks ill suited to the club. Now, frankly, playing as a second striker, you need to be supporting, you need to be running. And it was really, really strange. I thought it was very telling when Robin scored his goal. And I know there was some analysis here where he cut back inside. Actually, the person that should have stuck a leg in there was Ozil. Mm. And then I saw some debate on Twitter. Someone said, oh, no, but he's shadow marking the guy behind him. I was like, shadow marking? Is that a thing? But it just showed that he had no desire to go for the ball. He had no desire to track and try and help his team out. And a lot of people now saying that a team reflects their manager. And that just sums it up. It sums up Wenger right now as well, I think. Everything just seems a little bit dead and jaded, I think is the word. Mm.
Yeah. Ollie, in terms of Arsenal, there were lots of disappointing performances on the night. Notably, one notable stat that we tweeted out was that Francis Coquelin didn't complete a pass for around 30 minutes of game time, which is pretty impressive. But his opposite number, Thiago Alcantara, put in an absolutely sensational performance. Mm. What a player.
He's absolutely brilliant. I remember watching him for Spain's under-21s, I think in 2011, at the Euros, and he was just absolutely brilliant. He absolutely ran the show against England. Spain absolutely dominated the game. And every time I see him, he just conducts play just perfectly. He's exactly what you need from a playmaking midfielder. I think the only issue with him before was injuries. You know, he missed quite a lot of game time through injuries, but when he's fit, he is one of the best midfielders in Europe by a distance. And I think, everyone, when we talk about sort of transfer blunders, everyone sort of refers to the Kevin De Bruyne leaving Chelsea. I think Barcelona letting Thiago leave ranks, up there as well, because he is perfect for Barcelona. I don't understand how they wouldn't keep him on.
Especially with Andres Iniesta aging and the replacement for him is André Gomes.
Technically, he's just absolutely ridiculous.
I don't think there's many better midfielders in the world right now.
Yeah.
I genuinely don't. On the score performance score, he's ranked highest in Bundesliga of all players.
And there's a lot of good midfielders in that league.
There's a lot of good midfielders in that league.
At Bayern Munich. Greg, quickly on Wenger. There's whispers that he's going to leave. There's Greg Stober, our chief reporter, published an article saying that he's probably on his way out. The gut feeling at the club is that he's on his way out. Will it be a good thing for Arsenal or a bad thing in the long term? Let's not talk about whether or not he should leave. Is it going to be a good thing long term? Because we saw what happened to Man United. We saw what happened, with Liverpool, who were eager to turn over managers in recent years. Is it going to be a good thing or a bad thing?
I think the only argument at the moment, it seems to be that they should keep him purely because of the David Moyes situation at United, as you say, but that's going to happen at some point anyway. So whether they think it's maybe better to get it out of the way and kind of try and identify someone now and bring them in, because it's going to be a big job to replace him anyway. Mm. I think you can't really replace him with one man either, because he takes such control of all things at Arsenal. You almost need kind of to identify a sporting director or someone like that along with a head coach, which is going to be a big job. And maybe the only thing about the United thing is you would say that the Premier League now is so strong that maybe Arsenal think they can't afford to make that seismic change now and maybe drop down to 6th, 7th, miss out on the Champions League. I think a few years ago it would have been easier for them to scrape 4th with a new manager, but maybe now they'll think it's too hard. But I think ultimately it would be a good thing. At some point they're going to have to confront this, and I think it probably has come to an end.
Good job pointing out Arsene Wenger is not immortal.
I think one issue for Arsenal is there's a real shortage of top-class candidates ready to replace him. If you think of last summer, there was just, an abundance of world-class proven managers knocking about, Ancelotti, Mourinho, Guardiola. I'm not saying they would have gone to Arsenal necessarily. Maybe one of them would have. But you look at it now and I think whoever Arsenal appoint is going to be a bit of a punt, there's no real proven guy out there, I think, at the moment. Even Allegri, if they do get him, his track record's mixed. Obviously, he's been very good at Juventus, but I think whoever they appoint is going to be a bit of a risk.
It's an ideology thing as well, isn't it? Like, the new manager's going to come in, new ideology, and that club has not had a shift in ideology for a long, long time. Mm. And it's a fantastically, fantastically run club, but can you imagine a Simeone like managing Arsenal? Like, that's trying to
whip up a frenzy at the Emirates.
What's happening now, lads?
Quickly, it's Arsenal play Sutton United at the weekend, non-league Sutton United, Sanj. I mean, everyone's expecting a very comfortable Arsenal win, even if they turn out the kids. You'd expect the same? You're not going to predict a Sutton United upset?
Look, it's going to be very difficult for Sutton to win this game. But this is a strange old stadium, Gander Green. I've played there a few times, actually.
Really?
Three times. At university, we had a cup game there every year. And, they've got plastic pitch there now as well. It's a very, very different kind of atmosphere. And there's only 700 seats, 5,000 capacity altogether. Mm. Like, it's a weird old place. And if you're in a fragile state of mind and you turn out the wrong team, then, I'm not saying Sutton are going to win, but it could be tricky.
One person who's been all over the headlines is Sutton United's reserve goalkeeper Wayne Shaw, and our journalist Tashan Aliran had a little chat with him not too long ago.
So Wayne, obviously a big media out here today for Sutton Arsenal. How you've been around the club for quite a while. How's it feel?
Yeah, probably obviously for the Leeds game, it was pretty busy, but I think obviously today and next Thursday is going to be phenomenal. Every walk, journalists and even people coming over from Italy and all around the world, really. So yeah, the fantastic. Just focus at the moment on the game Saturday and game Tuesday, and then we can look forward to the media stuff that will be coming with it for the Arsenal game.
Has it been tough for the players to like kind of focus on the games before the Arsenal game?
I'll be lying if I say they wouldn't, because obviously it does. You know, all the attention that the lads are receiving it's been like phenomenal. So obviously we played the other night and we did get beat 5-0, but I think we put so much into it on Saturday that the circumstances prevailed that we just didn't have a lot left in the tank beside all the squad that we had available to us. So yeah, it's a tricky one, and I think, you know, at the back of the mind, you know, the lads don't want to get injured, neither do they. So it's one of them, but they're professional enough. If it does, you know, there's someone else to come in and do the job.
Does that, when you say it's at the back of their mind, does that affect how training goes or anything?
Obviously, you know, normally we train in front of probably two people, whereas now, you know, there's a lot of the attention, and obviously with all the TV crews and interviews that the lads have got to do, it doesn't reflect or take away anything what they're doing on the training field. But obviously with people around, you do see different people around that you don't see here before. So it's just a little focus, a little bit away from it, but nah, not so much.
What type of role do you yourself play? Because, you know, there's a lot of young players in the squad.
Yeah, I'm a jovial person, you know, having a laugh and a joke with the boys. Obviously full-time at the football club as well, so did a bit in the community. Again, it's about bringing everyone together, and I think, you know, this could be the hub for the Sutton community to get involved. And obviously with the big game that it is, everyone's rooting for us and everyone's all behind us.
How do you think the game will go? Because, you know,
I think if we keep a clean sheet for 5 minutes, we'd be doing all right. And then we'll see where it takes us now. But it's just a dream, really. I think once the lads get rid of their pre-match nerves and once they get on the pitch and, you know, playing in front of probably over 100 million viewers on the TV without the 5,000 that'll be in the ground as well. So, yeah, so I think the lads are just relishing it and probably looking forward to it. They still can't believe that we're playing Arsenal.
How many Arsenal fans are in the Sutton squad?
There's probably a good 10 players probably in the side, in the squad, that are Arsenal fans, big through and through. So yeah, it'd be a great occasion for them. I'm a bit disappointed, obviously. I'm from Southampton and Arsenal beat them in the last round, so it could have been Southampton at home, but I think we would have had a chance of beating.
Yeah, so would it be, because you don't want the players just to enjoy the occasion, you want them to enjoy it, but could you sense it possibly getting a result?
Yeah, listen, they've been there before, the lads, you know. There's over probably 800 to 1,000 football league appearances in the side or in the squad. So, you know, they're no mugs, but, you know, listen, we're playing against world-class players. So, you know, the step of the gulf, you know, it'll be probably that much way too far. But, listen, strange things have happened in football, like I said earlier, and we'll just give it a go once we're out there.
Wayne Shaw, Sutton United's reserve goalkeeper, speaking to Squawker there. PSG 4, Barcelona 0. Greg, speaking of managers under pressure, Luis Enrique's feeling it right now. That was a hounding loss for Barcelona, wasn't it? Really the sort of embarrassment you'd associate with clubs like Arsenal.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was so comprehensive, wasn't it? Right from the start, you could tell they were in a struggle because they just couldn't get out. PSG played with so much energy, intensity, closing down high up the pitch, and that seems to be the key with Barcelona at the moment. They can't build up like they used to, so they can't work the ball to the front three. It all becomes a bit disjointed, and if you disrupt their rhythm at the back, it seems that you can really get at them, and that's what PSG did. And Luis Enrique, as you say, it looks like he's definitely going to go at the end of the season. I think he perhaps would have done even if they had got through this tie, which now looks almost impossible. And yeah, definite problems at Barcelona and another club who need to think about what their next step's going to be.
Ollie, a quick word about Unai Emery. This is exactly why he was hired. Their league form's been disappointing, but it looks like everything that he's been doing this season, they played a very similar shape to what they've been playing in Liga. It's all been building up to this. He made Enrique, Messi and Barcelona look pretty ordinary.
Yeah, he's got an incredible track record in Europe, obviously, from his time at Sevilla. And I actually think the competitiveness of Liga on this season has probably helped PSG. You know, last season, they'd pretty much wrapped up the title by now, you know, already. I think that extra sharpness in their game sort of showed against Barcelona and the other night. That, you know, they were electric all over the pitch, and they've got real star quality, you know, throughout that side. Adding Julian Draxler to an already, you know, pretty formidable front line has just given them that extra boost. And Di Maria as well was just absolutely outstanding against Barcelona, and they ran rings around them. And, you know, he's the type of manager that has been brought in to take them further in Europe, and a resounding victory like that is only going to help him.
I don't know, did anyone expect Cavani to do what Cavani's done this season? I just didn't see that.
He's 30 now, which seems odd.
Really?
Yeah.
It's mad.
He's 30. Sanj, they're only the sixth side in the Champions League to knock four past Barca. They limited Messi, Suarez, Neymar to zero shots all game. Are they serious contenders? This is their fifth quarterfinal in a row, and it seems every year they're just becoming more and more mainstays of the sort of Champions League elite. Do they have a serious shot this year?
I think they do, actually. I really think they do, and actually I kind of want them to do it as well, if you know what I mean. Like, it'd be nice to have a PSG win in the Champions League. I think it'd be good for football generally. I think adding Draxler to that team is very, very intelligent. And the manager's got his head screwed on. He knows what he's doing. And yes, Barca are struggling this season, and Enrique is a little bit dazed and confused with his tactics right now. But still, to knock four past him is seriously impressive.
Yeah. Greg, a lot of people were talking after the game about Marco Verratti. He's yet to lose a Champions League home game for PSG. He looks like an absolutely amazing elite midfielder. And straight after the game, people were asking him, when are you going to Barca? You look like a perfect Barca player. And he said, I don't want to play for Barca. I want to win with PSG. Is he, given where Barca are at the moment, is he making the right decision in your eyes?
For now, probably, yeah. He's still got plenty of years ahead of him. He's probably the most important player at PSG in terms of when you take him out of the side, they really do. They can't operate in the same way. So, and there must be something kind of enticing about that idea of winning the first Champions League with a club or taking a club to a new level, which he obviously wouldn't get at Barcelona. I think if he continues to play like this, he probably will take that step up. But maybe 2-3 years, will it be a step up? Will they be kind of equal competitors?
Jose Basingua famously had the same issue at Chelsea. He wanted to just win it with Chelsea. Ollie, what next for Barca? Luis Enrique apparently had to be restrained from having a fight with a Catalan journalist. And, you know, his success, the treble that he got, was mostly attributed to Messi, Suarez and Neymar. He's been given zero credit historically for that. He's tried to implement a counter-attacking style. It doesn't seem to be working at all. The post-Pep hangover seems to rumble on at times for Barca. What's the next step for them? Bring in Arsene Wenger?
I think one thing they have to do is sort out what's going on behind the scenes. You know, a lot of Barcelona fans have been unhappy with the board and the president there for, you know, for their recent transfer dealings. You know, they spent a lot of money in the summer, and you'd probably say Umtiti's the only one who's actually improved that team. Gomez, you know, looked like a passenger the other night. And, you know, there's this thing, it's similar to Arsenal. If Enrique goes, who are they going to bring in? Sampaoli's probably, you know, the ideal candidate for them. But I think an issue for them is they've struggled to replace, you know, talismanic players in that team. Dani Alves hasn't been replaced at all. You could say, to a certain extent, Xavi as well. I think they just need to, you know, build that team from the back. The front three is fine. You know, they don't need to do anything with that.
They're okay.
They're all right.
They're decent.
They'll do. But the rest of the team, I think they need to just, you know, improve it this summer. It's a big, big summer for them.
Real Madrid 3, Napoli 1. Greg, I mean, crucial and frankly unbelievable away goal for Napoli from Lorenzo Insigne is the only thing keeping them in this tie. I mean, it takes about 17 replays to understand how Keylor Navas conceded from that position, doesn't it?
Yeah, when you saw it the first time, you just thought something is wrong here, that what has gone on, because you don't see shots taken that early from that position going that part of the net. It was really outstanding goal, and kind of sum Napoli up, because they're all about that movement of the front three, so fluid, play such good football at times, and we saw that early on in that game and kind of capped off by that goal. Unfortunately, they couldn't quite stick in there. The tie's probably still open, but they might have been in a better position had they taken a couple more chances. But yeah, a great goal, and maybe outdone by Casemiro's, but that's a debate.
Unbelievable volley, that. Sanj, we're so used to seeing Ronaldo in Champions League games, especially at the knockout stage, scoring decisive goals, getting a brace in the away leg or something like that. But against Napoli, he was in an oddly creative role. Can you imagine Ronaldo sort of taking more of a deep-lying playmaker role in as he gets older and older, as the pace starts to wane?
I think so, but the thing that really stood out for me is it looked like he had more pace. Like it looked like something had come back. Like the year, it looked like that scrawny 18-year-old at Lisbon again. Yeah. Right, he looked like that guy, and when the guy that first turned up to United with horrible, weird things in his hair. Do you remember that? That was odd.
But
I found it really encouraging, and I really, really enjoyed seeing him working for other people and not himself, which is the classic cliche thing to say about Ronaldo. But as time goes on, he's going to have to reinvent himself a little bit. But this was almost like a reinventing him to what he was, which is a very, very strange thing. But to still see him like terrorising people down the wings and on the touchline with little twinkle toes, that's brilliant. Love it.
It's great to see him bust out the skills again, Ollie. One player who was just at the peak of his game against Napoli was Toni Kroos. Scholes described him sort of this week as a player that he envied his passing range in the later stage of his career. If Paul Scholes is saying he envies your passing range, you know you're doing something right.
Yeah, that's a pretty sound endorsement, that, isn't it? Getting it from Scholes. Kroos, similar to Thiago, you know, he's just never unruffled in possession. When he gets the ball, he always, virtually always, finds a teammate. And he pops up with, you know, with the, you know, nice goals every now and again. They always seem to be exactly the same.
He just sort of slides them
into the bottom corner, right foot or left foot. And he's a brilliant player. Him and Modric together is just
unfair.
Absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, to be fair to Casemiro, he's allowed them to sort of go on and express themselves a little bit more. And Real have, you know, a real balance to their team now, I think.
Any hope for Napoli in your eyes?
I'd like to say yes. If they'd managed to go back home with 2-1, then maybe they might have a chance. I think two goals is a lot to overturn against Real. Real are pretty solid defensively as well. But Napoli's front three are very dangerous. You know, Mertens, Callejon and Insigne. And Hamsik behind them has been arguably the best midfielder in Europe this season. He's been very good. So they'll fancy their chances of getting something, but I think two goals is probably a bit too much.
I think they do have a small chance. Napoli were still creating big chances in that game, and they could have scored more goals. And I think that's indicative of the team. They do create chances, and you know what it takes is an early goal, and then you've got 80 odd minutes to try and get another one. Then you've won the game, right?
They've only lost two games at home this season as well, Napoli, but one of them was against Roma in Serie A, and they just got destroyed on the counter-attack, basically. Mo Salah kind of flying down the wind, and you think with Madrid's kind of capability to do that, maybe less so now with Bale out, but if he's back, I think Madrid will probably fancy their chances of getting a goal, and that maybe might kill it for Napoli.
Benfica 1, Dortmund 0 was the last tie this week in the Champions League. Kostas Mitroglou with a tap-in to win it. Can't believe I just said that. Dortmund's season had been a series of intermittent sprints, Sanj, and I guess the main headline taken away from this was they would have won the game 2 or 3-1 had Aubameyang not had an absolute shocker.
I have not seen a player of his of that calibre miss so many chances in such a short period of time.
And a penalty.
And such big chances as well. And it's almost like when you stepped up for the penalty, you kind of thought he was going to miss because everything about him, the body language is like Shevchenko in Istanbul. Like the body language is like, you're not going to score this because your confidence is
he just
shot.
Is he just tired from AFCON?
I think he's knackered. I think he's knackered, and I think maybe because of the way the season's gone, he's maybe got an eye elsewhere as well, I think. Yeah, I don't think he'll be playing for Dortmund next year.
Greg, the famous F word has been used to describe Thomas Tuchel recently. I'm talking, of course, about fraud. It's not quite working out for Tuchel this season. He's been superseded by Leipzig and, you know, Hoffenheim and Leverkusen. We've been running them a little bit close in the Bundesliga. Is he running out of invention? Is he running out of sort of that edge that he had over other managers in the Bundesliga and in Europe?
Yeah, possibly. As you say, it has been a disappointing season for them, really. They're still not assured of their top four place in Germany, which they would have thought they'd basically have that wrapped up by now and would be going for the title instead. So I think he does need to maybe next season prove that he has still got the ability to kind of take this team forward. I think if you look at some of the players they've got there, a lot of them are young. They should improve a year. People like Dembele, who's just come in, he's done brilliantly this season, but you think he'd be even more dangerous next. So I wouldn't write Tuchel off as a manager, but yeah, I think his stock has fallen a little bit this year.
Okay, let's talk a bit about the Europa League now. Man United 3, Saint-Etienne 0, Ollie. Before the game, everyone was talking about the battle of the Pogbas, Paul versus Florentin, and Paul put a resounding exclamation mark on his transfer fee by putting in a very commanding performance, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, this is what he's been brought in for, you know, to give United that star quality in midfield in the big games, and he delivered, you know, and all season he's been very, very good. And has sort of gone under the radar a little bit because he doesn't score goals and he doesn't assist. But he's the guy that keeps that United team ticking. He's not a player that's been brought in to be that decisive figure at the end of the pitch. That's what Ibrahimovic has been brought in to be. But yeah, he's an outstanding player. And I think United really sense that this is a good opportunity to win something and secure a Champions League place because, you know, in the Premier League, they're facing a bit of an uphill struggle to finish in that top four. Mm-hmm. I think Mourinho's looked at Europa League. It's a pretty weak competition this year. There's not too many big teams in there. And United, you know, will fancy their chance of going all the way with the likes of Pogba and Ibrahimovic.
Speaking of Ibrahimovic, Sanj, he's got as many goals now as Van Persie did in his first season at Man United, famously, you know, rifling Alex Ferguson's men to the league title. The only issue is he's 35. So he can't do it for much longer. How are United going to replace those goals?
Well, he's definitely 35. it's really strange because he's a bit of a freak of a player, isn't he? And there's very few players in the history of world football you can go, oh, he's a little bit like Ibrahimovic. There are very few on what he can do. The invention, the creativity, his game intelligence is not spoken about enough because it's very, very good. They're definitely relying on him. And do you really want to be that beholden to a 35-year-old? But yeah, I think Mourinho said he'll be there next season and he wants to see him there. And he's really his lieutenant on the pitch as well. I think he's so important to convey Mourinho's ethos on the pitch. Mm. He is his guy. And I think he would just string that out. They'll be playing this one out for as long as they possibly can. The thing with United in Europa League as well, and the thing that may come get them unstuck is, yeah, I reckon they're going to want to win it. It's a Mourinho thing, isn't he? He comes into a club, he's got to win something in that first year. But there's still a long way to go. Is it six more games you want to get to the final?
Yeah.
Five?
Mm. Yeah. It's a big old competition.
That's a long, long way, as well as, you know, the intense Premier League fixtures that they've still got to go for. So I don't know if they can do both, actually.
Mm. It's like what we saw with Liverpool last season. It seemed like they were really going for the Europa League and everyone almost assumed they would drop off in the Premier League and then win the competition.
The
Yeah, but obviously, as Sanchez, if you run into a team, as they did with Sevilla in the final, have an off day or an off second half, and then it's over.
Or you have Alberto Moreno in your team.
Yeah, which they probably
basically
won't.
Basically, yeah.
Or the opposition has Ava Banega. Let's talk a bit about Man United a bit more. They're in a great run of form, Greg. Unbeaten in 20 games. They're yet to concede a goal at Old Trafford in 2017. It seems like they've got an incredibly deep squad, very few injuries. Seems like everything's just sort of falling into place for them. They're in the League Cup final. They're pretty much in the quarterfinals of the Europa League. So it's all looking fantastic for them at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, they've definitely kind of clicked, haven't they? I think the formation and the system they've been using in the last few weeks in the Premier League, especially with Mkhitaryan at number 10, see Pogba a little bit deeper. It seems to have brought out the best in those front four players and then in the midfield as well. Mourinho, the thing with the depth is it means it's a good thing, but it also means you've got so many options to kind of settle on what your actually starting 11, starting setup is. So it's taken him a while to do that, but it looks like now he kind of has found a formula which United do look very good in.
Quickly, Ollie, before we move on from United, a word on Anthony Martial, who was frozen out seemingly bizarrely and now sort of being integrated back into the fold. He was very, very impressive against Saint-Etienne.
Yeah, he's the latest to be sort of frozen out, as you said, by
Mourinho. Mourinho treatment.
It's Mkhitaryan, then him, and it looks like Luke Shaw's, you know, in his bad books at the moment. I think Martial, you know, everyone knows he's a very, you know, big talent. He's very explosive, very powerful. I just think, you know, at times his finishing and his end product lets him down. But I think we forget that he's 20 years old just because he looks, you know, he looks so developed already.
He's a big lad.
He is, yeah. And it was weird, you know, seeing him linked with Tottenham last week. I was like, how are Spurs affording his wages? How are they going to afford him? But he's worth keeping, definitely. At 20 years old, he's only going to get better. And, you know, playing with people like Ibrahimovic and Mkhitaryan,
he needs games.
He's only going to learn.
The kid needs games, and he will do it. And actually, I've just been looking at United's fixture list. There's plenty of opportunity here if they want to gun for both of those. I mean, they've still got some huge games. Two games going. Everton coming to Old Trafford. Chelsea going to Old Trafford. They're going away to Arsenal.
Got the Manchester Derby soon.
Manchester Derby, and away to Spurs. Like, they have got some serious games in the Premier League, let alone Europa League. So yeah, Martial's got to play in some of those, surely, because they've got to develop the talent.
They'll need to use the squad. As Sanj said, their squad is so deep at the moment. We haven't even spoken about Rashford. He's sort of been forgotten about a little bit. They've got so much attacking talent. Mata's been brilliant recently as well. And they're going to have to use that squad with games coming thick and fast.
You mentioned Spurs earlier. I'm glad you are, because I needed a link. AA Ghent 1, Spurs 0. A massive, massive shock in the Europa League first leg. Ghent also named a massively changed starting 11, Ollie. They made more change to their starting 11 than Spurs did. And they came away with a win and had the better of it, really. I mean,
yeah.
What happened?
Yeah, Spurs' form is starting to become a bit of a worry now. You know, I think the Liverpool game, people sort of put down to, you know, an off day, a bad day at the office. But as you said, they were awful last night with a virtually full-strength side. Eriksen was the only player who, and maybe Son, were the only two big names missing from that team. I think a big issue for Spurs has been the injury to Vertonghen sort of derailed them in the fact that they had to switch from the back three that was working really, really well and go back to a back four. And it seems like, you know, that change in system has really stunted them going forward. At the start of the season, they were playing 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3, and they looked really sort of limited in the final third. The 3-4-2-1 opened everything up, and they were, you know, blitzing teams like in the Chelsea game. And I think losing Vertonghen and Danny Rose was really, you know, that left side has become very weakened in the last couple of games. And they've got a huge game on Sunday against Fulham now. You know, Fulham are a decent side, and if Spurs lose that, then, you know, things are starting to look a bit shaky.
Yeah, Sanj, Spurs started 4 at the back, did not work, switched to 3 at the back, then they brought on Son and dropped Dele Alli deeper, Vertonghen had a shocker, then they sort of moved Ben Davies more central. Like, Pochettino tried about 16 different tactics in the game and it just, none of it worked.
No, I mean, you've got to admire that he does change things, because there's nothing more infuriating when you're sitting there, things aren't working, please make a sub, do something.
Shout out to Arsenal fans.
Hey, boom, boom, we're there again. So you've got to admire that. At least he was trying to find a way. I think Spurs will be okay, but I think there needs to be some serious signings in the summer to improve that team, because going back to the Liverpool game, it soon as Danny Rose was not playing, as soon as everyone knew that's where the danger is going to lie. Mm-hmm. Everyone knew it, and I guess the mistakes that Poch is making right now, everyone makes mistakes, but he's making some very, very painful ones, things that are really costing them. Mm. Like how high they're playing the line at the moment. If they haven't got pace at the back, don't play a high line.
Yeah.
The basic stuff.
Yeah, very interesting. Greg, quick note on Spurs' waveform and the fact that the return legs at Wembley, which has been a bit of an issue for them, it was an issue in the Champions League, they've only won 2 of their last 14 games away from White Hart Lane. It'll be a sellout night at Wembley. The box office, they've really gone for it. They're giving them away. No. It's going to be a massive sellout night. It's going to be a lot of pressure on Spurs to deliver in this second leg. Do you reckon they can turn it around?
I think they can, but I totally agree with the issue of Wembley. It dodged them in the Champions League. They'd never really looked comfortable. And even if it wasn't an issue at the start of the season or was seen as an easy excuse, it's almost become one because the fact that they did do so badly in the Champions League group stage, particularly at Wembley, means that that's going to be playing on their minds. And if St Etienne get a goal, or if they have some few chances early on, then Spurs will definitely get nervous.
Yeah.
Just a final thing on Spurs. I think we'll see a lot of what Pochettino wants for the season from how he, you know, his team in the second leg. Last season, Spurs were going great in the Europa League, and then the Premier League sort of took precedent. And Pochettino basically threw the game against Dortmund. I think this team really needs to win a trophy just to take that next step. And Pochettino as well. He hasn't won anything yet. So it'll be interesting to see how he sort of juggles, you know, the league and the cup competitions this year.
Very interesting. Greg, going back to you. Villarreal 0, Roma 4. The main thing we need to talk about here, Edin Dzeko hat-trick, 28 goals this season now. He seems to form part of a club of strikers around Europe who get incessantly criticised despite the fact that they score loads of goals.
Yeah, he's been really good this season, and when he signed the summer before last, it seemed like a perfect signing for Roma because they were just missing that focal point at the top of the pitch. They were still playing Totti a lot at that point, who obviously drops deep, and it didn't really work last season. Things didn't click, but this season he's provided them exactly what they need in the penalty area. He's been so clinical generally, and some really good goals last night in those hat-tricks, in that hat-trick there, a couple of really nice turns inside the box, and yeah, he's going really well. And 28 goals at this stage with a few months left of the season is a very impressive tally.
Roma potential challengers for the Europa League title?
Yeah, I think this tie was almost, whoever wins this would be seen as right up there in terms of the favourites to win it. And the fact it was so convincing, 4-0 against a team who have a very good defensive record away from home is an outstanding result. So, yeah, definitely.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the FA Cup. It's FA Cup weekend. It's our favourite weekend. Blackburn versus Man United. Sanj, any danger for United here, really? Man United have got such a big squad. They can name so many top-class players and by changing all 11 players, can't they?
No danger here. No. They're going to steamroll them. Blackburn aren't good. Looking at the stats for Blackburn in the league this season, I think only Wigan have had less shots in the box than them.
Good lord.
Yeah, that's bad. Like, second from bottom, like, they are not going to cause any problems for United. The best case scenario for them is a draw. That's it. But I think they're going to get steamrolled, frankly.
Ollie, do you agree with that?
Yeah, probably. But again, I remember 5 years ago, United were playing Blackburn. They were rock bottom of the table.
And Josh King.
And
was it Josh King? No, that was against Stoke.
Sure. And Fergie picked Raphael and Park in central midfield. And that's the famous game where Pogba was like, "Nah, I'm off, mate. I'm not playing behind these two." Mm. And everyone thought United would steamroller them. I agree with Sanj, they probably will. But Blackburn, I mean, they've been so dire in the Championship this season. This will probably be a bit of a relief for them, you know, getting away from that and playing in the Cup.
Yeah. Lose somewhere else.
Yeah.
United, it's not unfathomable, Greg, that United are on for a treble here, weirdly enough. The Gerard Houllier treble, I believe.
The real treble.
The real treble. The FA Cup, they're doing very well, got a big squad. League Cup final, Europa League, everything's going well. Not bad.
Yeah, and if they were to even win maybe two out of those three and finish in the top four, or if one of them's the Europa League, they qualify for the Champions League anyway, then you have to say that's a really good season, even though they have struggled in the Premier League at times.
Wolves versus Chelsea. Interesting tie, Sanj. What threat that Wolves posed Liverpool could affect Chelsea, in your opinion?
I think the way that Wolves beat Liverpool is not the way that Wolves would beat Chelsea, frankly. I mean, they got a very, very early goal, and suddenly the onus was on Liverpool to really go for it, and they left more space. Conte doesn't really operate like that. I think it's going to be a tight one to begin with. I think Wolves will try and start it very, very quickly, but Kante.
Do you reckon Kante will start?
I think Kante will play in this game.
He can just play 100 games a season.
Yeah, I think he just can. I don't even know if the man's human or not. He's been sent back from the future to show us all how midfielders should be.
Final game that we want to talk about, Fulham versus Spurs. Ollie, this is looking a bit tense now. Poch did not rotate his squad for the Europa League, so he's going to have to make some serious changes, especially in midfield. Eriksen came off the bench yesterday and still looked a bit jaded. Is there danger of an upset here? Fulham are no slouchers.
Yeah, it's a potential banana skin. I think Fulham's position in the Championship is probably a false one because they've actually been very good.
False position.
Yeah.
It's the new false nine.
They play very good football under Djukanovic, and in Tom Kearney, they've got one of the best players in the division. They've got good players, and they've spent a decent amount of money as well. And it depends on what side Poch puts out. You know, this time last year, Spurs had Palace. They played a load of kids and lost to Palace at White Hart Lane. So I think after Thursday's result, Poch will want Spurs to get back on the right track. And I think he'll pick a strong team because of that. But Fulham aren't going to be, you know, they're not going to roll over for Spurs at all. This is a good game for them to show that they, you know, they can take that step into the Premier League again.
I'm calling Fulham.
You're calling Fulham?
I'm just going out and calling Fulham. Yeah. I think Fulham will win this.
It's at Craven Cottage.
Yeah, I think they'll win it.
Greg?
Yeah, I think Fulham could do it, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, that was easy. Okay, it's that time of the week on the Friday pod where we play a little game of Would You Rather, and I've got probably the two toughest yet. I'm going to leave a little silence. People are reading the agenda, looking at it, going, oh my God, how am I going to answer this? I'll start off with you, Greg. Would you rather, right now, be Arsene Wenger or Luis Enrique, both the two most under pressure managers in the world in football?
Yeah, I'm going to say Luis Enrique.
Okay.
Because, and I'm not doubting his, I'm sure he takes great pain in Barcelona's suffering at the moment. I'm not sure he's quite got the same level of suffering as Wenger seems to have at the moment. As we said about that post-match press conference at Bayern, he just looked like a broken man, and it is sad to see someone with such a great kind of track record in previous years kind of come to that at the club he's dedicated his career to, essentially. So for that basis, because I don't want to be so sad, I'm going to go for Luis Enrique.
Greg doesn't want to be sad. Sanj, do you want to be sad?
I don't think anybody really wants to be sad. Goths, maybe. I think I would rather be... It's so hard. maybe just to vary it up, maybe Arsene Wenger.
Yeah.
Maybe it'd be Arsene Wenger and sitting there thinking, actually, if I did stay another year, what would I have to do to make this work? Open the checkbook! Kroenke, on the phone, now. I need some cash. You've got plenty of cash.
Yeah.
Let's go do it. Let's disrupt that business model just for 12 months and see what happens.
Yeah.
That'd be fun, actually.
Similar to Greg, I'd rather be Enrique, just, you know, for the fact that Wenger has been there for 20 years, invested so much in that club, put so much into it, enjoyed great success, and yet he's just getting criticised and, you know, ridiculed from pillar to post. And I actually feel sorry for him at this point, because he's, you know, it's just relentless sort of criticism from Arsenal fans.
Would you not think that Arsene Wenger might be sitting there thinking, well, I can walk into pretty much any job I want?
Yeah, but I mean, just the way he was speaking after Bayern, I actually did feel sorry for him, because it felt like he, you know, has so much faith in this team and they just let him down and he just looked like a broken man, really. Mm. So I'd rather be Enrique.
Okay. For that. The next one, would you rather? This one's an absolute doozy. I'll come to you first, Ollie, as well, because I know you don't like that. Thiago Alcantara or Toni Kroos? You're a manager.
Mm.
You can only pick one of them. Who are you picking?
It's very, very tough, but I'd probably just go with Thiago, because he's slightly more dynamic and he's got a few more skills in his locker. Kroos is brilliant. You know, he's a midfield metronome. He keeps the ball, you know, ticking. He finds a teammate every single time. And as we said earlier, he pops up with the odd goal. But I think Thiago's just got that little bit extra. Okay. Little bit extra.
Greg?
I saw you shaking your head there, Nick, so I'm going to make it worse for you. By
I'm just an unbiased presenter, Greg. I have no idea what you're talking about.
I'm going for Thiago as well.
Good Lord.
I think his array of qualities just slightly edge him ahead of Kroos, who is brilliant as well. He's the son of a Brazilian international, isn't he, Thiago? But brought up in Spain, and he's almost a combination of that South American street footballer when he goes on those dribbles, those dynamic bursts, but he's also got that kind of measured passing, that intelligence that you maybe associate with the European academies, and yeah, he's perfect.
He's perfect.
Oh.
Man crush.
Sanj, Thiago or Kroos?
Kroos. Kroos, because with Thiago, as incredible as he is, he's one of my favourite players in the world right now. I think there are other players in the world you can get to not do what he does, but do something similar. With Kroos, there aren't many people that can do what he does that as well as he does it. So Kroos for me.
Okay.
Cruise control.
Always in cruise control. Okay, that was Would You Rather. A really, really tough one this week. Next is final sort of segment of the show is one game to watch around Europe this weekend. Ollie, you're going for a walk in the park. You're having a lovely weekend. You know, you might think about doing some shopping, get some courgettes, aubergines, make a ratatouille. You're a bit of a chef.
How did you know?
But in between all of this, there's a European game that you have to watch. You think, you know what? I'll chuck on BT Sport too. What game are you watching on your Virgin Box?
Well, I chuck down my shopping and I get home to watch Sociedad v Villarreal in La Liga. It's fifth place, six. I think there's 5 points separating them. And Sociedad are only 1 point off Atletico in fourth. Mm. So there's an outside chance that they could, you know, gate crash that top four and make a Champions League push. And Villarreal obviously got spanked by Roma in midweek, and they've got something to prove. So two interesting teams with some very talented individuals. So I think it'll be a good game.
Okay. Greg, how about you in between the bread-kneading course and the cocktail afternoon? What are you watching?
If I've got time in between all that, I might try and squeeze in Gladbach against RB Leipzig in the Bundesliga.
Oh, that's going to be a cracker.
Yeah, because Gladbach have picked up a bit under Dietrich, and I think they're unbeaten in the last five. They're up to 10th in the table. Leipzig, they lost last weekend at home to Hamburg. Really shock result, 3-0, which means they're now 7 points behind Bayern. Still, I think the margin is 8 points between fifth place, so that the Champions League still looks pretty secure. But if they want to keep going with that title push, they're going to need to win this weekend. But Gladbach, they are resurgent and they'll cause them problems.
Okay. Sanj, you're the CEO of a company. You have a kid. You're a busy jogger. You're an incredibly busy man. What game have you decided to adorn with your attention this weekend?
Well, for very selfish reasons, I have gone for Milan Fiorentina.
Okay.
It's not going to be a great game. But and both teams are fighting for Europa League place this season. That's the best, I think, that they can hope for. But very selfishly, I'm very much obsessed with Suso.
Okay.
Liverpool never should have let him go.
Suso watch.
Suso watch. for me this weekend.
Okay, so guys, you've heard them. Get on some Suso watch, bit of Leipzig, and Villarreal versus Sociedad. Could be fun. Thanks very much to all of our guests, Ollie Young-Miles, Greg Lee, freelancer for National and 442, and Sanjit Atwal. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll be back on Monday. Greg Johnson with the Monday Squawker Talker. In the meantime, please subscribe on iTunes, follow us on Twitter, and we'll see you very, very soon. Bye-bye.